spooky? Do you think I'm spooky?
I told my mom I thought I saw a werewolf. And my mom believed me.
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay. Serious crap.
You think these people were eaten?
My dog stepped on a bee.
Unidentified flying objects. I think that fits the description pretty well.
Haunted human remains.
He's dead, but he has the power to move and kill.
She was bludgeoned to death with an axe.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
When I stand on the mountain and I say, do it, it gets done. If it don't get done, then I'll move on it. And that's the last thing in the world you want me to...
And this is the Spookies Podcast.
This will begin to make things right. This is Michael.
And I'm Stephanie. And welcome back to the Spookies Podcast.
We're back. Can you believe it?
You sound so enthused.
I am. Yeah. We wouldn't be back if it wasn't for our loyal listeners. We're here because of you. All five of you. I know it seemed like this day would never come. I kept saying, we're coming back. And then finally, we're back. You know, we're not back until we are back.
Right.
So where have you been, Stephanie? What the hell happened?
I mean,
big mystery revealed.
Why is it all my fault?
It is your fault.
No, it isn't. I mean, it's partly my fault. I did get recruited last Christmas to work in the beauty industry again. So I was commuting, and then I got injured, and then I got COVID, which meant I had to take a break from the work and COVID, the driving.
COVID's not real. RFK, the guy who eats dogs, has told me it's not real. And if a person that eats dogs tell you something is not real, that means it's not real. Don't you know?
So I've been sick for the past 3 months, and then but I am going back just in time for Christmas. So God have mercy on my soul. And just to make things interesting, we adopted a dog 2 weeks ago.
Big mistake. Worst mistake of our lives.
What were we thinking?
Well, it was her idea. I was like, nope.
No, he said we should get him.
After 2 weeks of you basically threatening me.
I didn't threaten. I was bummed we weren't getting a
dog. You're a pushy woman. Just constantly nudging me. And then she went. So what happened was I wasn't feeling well and she was going to the ballet. And I was like, I don't want to go to the fucking ballet. I don't want to sit there. I'm going to get sick. And then I was like, okay, I'll cave in on the dog thing.
That's why you caved in on the dog thing?
Well, it was other reasons. It's because I knew you really wanted the dog. But I was like, you can go to the ballet. And it ended up working well because you went with your friend. And I think that fit better anyway.
She loves, my friend loves ballet.
You two had fun.
The two of us are like two peas in a pod, cussing like pirates everywhere we went. So we had so much fun. It was really fun.
And I had stuff to do. I had to work on the podcast. So ever since we've been gone, I have worked on the podcast.
Ironically, yes.
There has not been a day where it has been from my mind. I have been researching. I have been writing just nonstop. But Stephanie got a new job and became a Swiftie.
I mean, I guess you could say she put a spell on me.
Well, she is a witch.
Who says she's a witch?
Elon Musk. Who else?
The South African. The guy who makes fucking pixelated trucks that turn into fucking bombs.
Elon the foreigner.
I'm just going to call him South African Edison. But well, stupid.
This is a fact.
More stupid.
If you're against illegal immigration, he was an illegal immigrant when he came here.
And his gross brother.
I know he's white, so you guys don't care about that. You know, when it's scary brown people, we care. But
yeah. But apartheid Clyde, you're all good with. Yeah. So.
He is so embarrassing.
God.
And then the worst thing happened was I was talking to my mother and she compared me to Elon Musk. And I'm like, first of all, I don't have autism. He says he has autism. Maybe he doesn't.
I don't believe him. I think he's just a psychopath. I think he uses that as a cover for his bad behavior.
And I'm not a billionaire. I'd like to be.
Right.
If you guys would subscribe to the Patreon, I could be a billionaire. For $2.
For all five of you, if they would just subscribe.
I'm going to say this right now. We're going to set up the Patreon. We are doing two Patreon episodes this week about these two episodes, our Halloween episodes that are coming out this week. And they're really interesting. We kind of spill the tea a little bit about other things we're not going to talk about on normal podcasts, but we're also going to go into the stories that we're talking about tonight. But yeah, his cars are bulletproof. What are you talking about?
The frames, they're built on aluminum frames. You guys, they can't even do truck shit. You can't even pull anything without the back half falling the fuck off.
Those windows shatter faster than his credibility.
And my favorite pastime now is finding Cybertruck fails or Tesla fails and posting them to my Instagram stories. It just gives me so much life.
Well, they look like the Breaking Bad car.
Yeah. What was that? The Pontiac?
Like the Breaking Bad car mixed with Minecraft.
Honestly, it's like an ugly DeLorean. It's not even as cool as a DeLorean. They're just stupid. Like, people can't even see out of the rear view on these fucking things. So, like, they have to rely on a camera that may or may not work. Wow, that's so safe.
Honestly, I'm glad they exist. It makes it super easy to spot all the assholes on the road. Because if you're driving one of those, I know you're an asshole. And I'm going to say this. Look, if you love Elon Musk enough to buy one of those things, this probably isn't the podcast for you. If you like Andrew Tate, this probably isn't the podcast for you.
Remember when rich people used to buy really fucking cool cars and you were like, damn, that's a fucking nice car. And now they just get Cybertrucks.
Yeah, because they want to. They think that that somehow offends people who don't like Elon Musk. And I just think you wasted your money.
Yeah, no one thinks you're cool. No one thinks it's cool.
I just think of them as incel wagons for mass
shooters. They are. Was it Facebook Marketplace you saw one for sale for $100,000?
Yeah.
And by the way,
you know, because I was thinking of buying one.
No. By the way, Elon Musk has in the contract that he has to get a cut of the sale. So when you sell it at a loss no matter what. You will never, ever get your shitty money back for that shitty piece of shit.
Elon
truck.
Musk being against illegal immigration is really funny considering he's a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to keep calling him the foreigner. I don't care if that sounds offensive. He's white. I can say it.
He also is a blood diamond owner. So I don't really care. Fuck him.
He is a maniac.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people that I know.
He's defrauded the government.
Who used to admire him. And then once we found out who he really was, we're like, oh.
Oh, I was one of those people. I thought I didn't know.
And look.
Because I didn't know. Like, I didn't know that he wasn't a real engineer and stuff. And then you find out and it's.
It goes beyond the Trump thing.
Okay? Yeah.
I honestly find him more annoying than Trump. I know.
Well, he ruined Twitter, so.
Oh, it's fucking 4chan.
It's fucking 4chan. I mean, functionality on it.
You know,
is
I'm
not
on
there.
4chan all the time, so I know.
You're not. I don't even know how to get to 4chan.
I think I've been there once.
I don't want that on my browser history.
Stephanie went off to work while I stayed home, living the remote work dream as a full-time cat dad to our two familiars. And I was busy writing stories about Resurrection Mary.
So just how many Resurrection stories have you written?
A lot. More than two and less than 37.
I would say it's closer to 100.
No, it's not 100.
It's so many.
I've written a bunch of other stories too.
You guys, he wrote a novel. He wrote an entire fucking novel.
That was called World Building. That's not a novel.
So much
I
writing.
I think your friend Deidre would call it World Building.
I want to know what her thoughts are on all these writings. It would be great. But, you know, people were asking about the Dog Man versus Resurrection Mary. So what happened?
No comment.
He's dodging the question. Did you take a blood oath?
No less than having my breast torn open and my heart and organs thrown over my left shoulder and carried into the Valley of Jehoshaphat.
What the fuck is that?
Freemasonry. What? I'm a Mason.
Oh.
33, man. 33. 33. We have lost all Chris Noel followers in the chat. They're gone. They're like, he's a devil worshiper. I'm actually not a Mason. We're going to do an episode on Freemasonry. Call 33.
I feel like that shit takes too much commitment anyway. Like,
I don't want to.
Who's got the time to
my
be a Mason?
My grandfather. He told me this story. I may have talked about this before, but he got invited to like join the Masons and he was going to do it. And then at the last minute, he was like, I'm not going in there with those people.
I bet he said something worse than people.
Yeah. Yeah. He probably the word goddamn was involved. So everybody's like, because the people on Facebook I was talking about were doing witches. I was like, what is this? It's called Night Call. Where's the witch episode? Well, we're going to do the witch episode. I have been informed people don't like titles for episodes, even though we're still doing the titles.
I don't understand. Oh, you mean... No, I don't understand.
We were going to do an episode on witches and witchcraft. You know this. But then when I looked at the...
I don't understand the titles thing, though.
They don't like ambiguous titles. They want you to spell it out. Not because they're dumb. They just want to know what they're getting into.
Okay. But that's what the description is for, right?
And you can part just read of it, though, is an algorithm thing. Because if you think about it, who's going to click on something with some weird, like, obscure name... As opposed to, this is about Ted Bundy. Or
man, the algo just ruins all kinds of creativity. I fucking hate it.
No, it's not that. It's just people don't... The thing about Aaron Mankey, so Aaron Mankey from Lore.
Yeah, that's who I'm thinking of.
He got lucky with the algorithm, and that's why... it's a great podcast, don't get me wrong. But he was featured on a front page, and that's where it took off.
Yeah.
That's why he's allowed to do episodes with these weird, vague names. As opposed to me, where I have to come up with something to... clickbait people in, basically. You know,
we got a YouTube you in.
This is about the Idaho 4. Click on it. You know, which I hate doing that because I want to come up with something more creative. But we were doing to do an episode on witches and witchcraft, but then I looked at how many episodes we've done, and we're very close to 50. So that will be episode 50. We have two episodes this week, though. The catch is that they're story episodes, which means I wrote them and Stephanie narrates them. And, you know, if that's not your thing, that's fine. But it's Halloween week. We're headed into election. I want to do something more fun. We are still doing the witchcraft episode. That's going to be episode 50, which I think is fitting. And I'm currently actually reading a book about the history of the archetype of the witch. And this plays a vital role in what we're talking about. We're going to go through all the history. We're not going to do like a whole episode on witch trials because that's too much. You could do 5 on the witch trials.
There's so much there. I mean, just in Europe alone before you even get to America. Yeah.
We're going to cover it, though. We're going to mention it. And we're going to talk about how much misogyny and sexism is in the fear of witches. Mm-hmm. That kind of fuels it more than, I think, religious fervor. But we have witches.
And greed. Greed. Can't.
Yeah, that does play a role. We have a lot of good stuff coming up. And by good, I mean nasty and horrible. We have witches. We have a ghost story based on a real incident within the justice system that Stephanie is going to narrate. And that's almost feels like a story I wrote, but it's not, guys. I just...
Well, he does write all the things I say, so...
Well, for the narration stuff, yes.
Yeah. Just in case you guys think that I am the architect of this whole thing, I'm not. I am the talent.
We have an episode about sea monsters... And H.P. Lovecraft. That's really interesting, the mythology around that. And finally, because people have asked for it for years, and I have a book on him, we've got a heavy hitter, Ted Bundy. The Ted Bundy.
We're really doing Ted Bundy?
Yep.
You've said forever we weren't going to do Ted Bundy.
Well, I got the book on him, and it's interesting. We're going to cover it, though, in a different way.
Okay.
We're not talking about how cool Ted Bundy is and how much we want to date him, you know, which is what
so gross.
Most podcasts I've seen are like, you know, well, he is kind of neat.
No, he's not kind of neat. He's good at blending in because he's like, you know, mildly attractive.
There is an...
So he looks normal.
There's a reason why, though, Ted Bundy is up there with Jack the Ripper... And the Zodiac. And I don't mean that as a compliment. It's because he's so vile.
Yeah.
You know, those are three of the vilest people to ever walk the earth. You know, and then maybe you can make the argument being infamous. There's a certain, you know, something to be said about that. But I still think he's a disgusting piece of shit, you know. But look, this podcast is about disgusting pieces of shit.
I mean, we talked about Elon Musk, so yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about, you know, creepy dudes from Chicago. So, not going to say his name, White Billy D. Williams, our troll that won't leave us alone.
I love that we live rent-free in this ding-dong's
head. Imagine thinking White Billy D. Williams is clever. That just means you're a proud boy. That's all it means. All right, Stephanie, I'm going to turn it over to you, because no one wants to hear me talk. Mm-hmm. Let's all gather around the campfire for a Halloween story.
This is Season 4, Episode 5, Night Call. Chicago, Illinois, Halloween night, 2029. For weeks, the Chicago PD had been chasing shadows, but tonight, they believed they had a breakthrough. A woman who had been terrorizing the city's corrupt elites called 911 and confessed to the murders. Her voice was eerily calm, like a gentle breeze, as she divulged details only the killer could know. With haunting finality, she revealed her location, as if daring them to come for her, a condemned warehouse on Chicago's crime-ridden South Side. Facing intense pressure from the mayor and his donors to catch the killer, a judge authorized the raid. Everyone in the precinct was gripped by the mayor's ultimatum. Catch the suspect tonight, or heads would roll. Warrior cops, enforcers of the elite's will, quickly mobilized. Squad cars and armored personnel carriers tore through the night, sirens wailing as they approached the crumbling structure. It stood in the heart of a desolate, blight-stricken neighborhood. Its shattered windows and sagging roof barely visible through the thick fog rolling off Lake Michigan. A full moon loomed large overhead, casting a silver glow over the warehouse, giving the decaying structure the foreboding of a haunted castle. But the police weren't the only ones closing in on the warehouse. Across the city, dangerous criminals, drug dealers, Jamaican gangs, the Colombians, MS-13, the Triads, and muscle for the Chicago mob all received mysterious phone calls from a sultry female voice. She directed them to the same warehouse, convincing them that their rivals were waiting inside to be ambushed. Driven by greed, machismo, and the chance to eliminate their competition, the criminals armed themselves and raced frantically towards the same location as the police, unaware of the others on their way. The heavily militarized police, clad in full riot gear, silently entered the north side of the warehouse, eyes fixed on one prize: the killer who called them here. Their movements were fluid, barely audible on the cracked concrete as they scanned every shadow for the killer. Flashlights flickered against dilapidated walls. Guns raised, fingers tight on the triggers. They advanced cautiously, hearts racing. Armed with weapons of war, their eyes darted from shadow to shadow, ready to gun down anything that moved in the darkness. Nothing matters to them but catching the killer. If a homeless child crosses their path, they won't hesitate. They'll blow them in half without a second thought. At the same time, criminals converged on the same warehouse from the south, pulling up in dark SUVs and exotic luxury cars. One by one, drug dealers, gang members, and mob enforcers arrived in quick succession, slipping into the shadows. Despite their proximity, none of them spotted the others as they approached, the ghostly fog keeping each faction concealed from one another. Tension crackled in the nocturnal air, thick with the pagan madness of Halloween night, under the watchful gaze of the full moon, the atmosphere heavy with a growing sense of impending doom and grim inevitability. Each gang of criminals entered the warehouse from different entry points, wary and on edge, expecting to ambush their rivals. All packing assault rifles, shotguns, revolvers, and semi-automatics with armor-piercing rounds. Both groups, police and criminals, moved deeper into the warehouse, separated by walls of rusting metal and dilapidated concrete. The structure's labyrinthian layout kept each faction hidden from the others, until suddenly, they collided in the maze of darkened corridors, creating a fatal chain reaction of instant escalation. And then, all hell broke loose. Every faction, police and criminals alike, drew their guns and simultaneously opened fire at the sight of one another. The confined space of the warehouse became a deadly crossfire, a lethal Mexican standoff, with every side shooting at the others in a frantic bid to survive. Cops, blinded by the sudden chaos, fired wildly, convinced they were under attack by the killer. Criminals, hearing gunfire and seeing shapes dart across the darkness, believed their rivals had set them up. What began as a calculated raid turned into a frenzied shooting gallery, with every trigger pulled in fear, adrenaline, or testosterone-fueled aggression. Bullets tore through the air from every direction, ricocheting off walls and metal beams. Muzzle flashes lit up the darkness in bursts, illuminating terrified faces locked in primal survival mode. Everyone fired blindly, unable to discern friend from foe in the mayhem. The warehouse now roared with the sound of deafening gunfire and the screams of the dying. No one was spared. Cops, drug dealers, gang members, all shooting at one another, the confusion too thick to realize they were all caught in the same web of death. It wasn't strategy anymore. It was every man for himself. Bodies dropped like flies, crumbling to the cracked concrete. Some fell on impact, struck down by the relentless hail of bullets, while others, wounded and bleeding, dragged themselves behind cover, only to be gunned down moments later. Warm, sticky blood flowed freely on the concrete as the shootout raged on. Police officers and criminals' bullet-riddled bodies twisted and tangled in grotesque final embraces. The massacre reaching an operatic climax when one of the Colombians tossed a grenade. It exploded, fragmenting with devastating force. Shrapnel tore through flesh and bone, shredding bodies on contact. The blast shook the entire building, and whole floors came crumbling down, bearing those hellbound under tons of falling debris. The air was thick with the stench of gunpowder, blood, and burning flesh, mixing with the chill of Halloween night. The ground littered with the dead, their bodies mangled and broken amidst the rubble. The warehouse had become a graveyard, and they all died screaming, as though the spirits of the night had come to claim them. As suddenly as it had begun, the gunfire ceased. An uncomfortable silence settled over the warehouse, broken only by the distant wail of sirens. Too late to save anyone. A body cam on one of the dead officers, still recording, captured something. Something that should not have been there. From the shadows, a darkly enchanting figure emerged. At first, just a disembodied skull floating in the void. Her form took shape with haunting precision, assembling itself piece by piece until her hourglass figure materialized in the darkness. It was Mary. Resurrection Mary. Draped in her signature flowing white dress, she stepped forward, her face obscured by a vintage skeletal Halloween mask, secured around her head with ribbon. The ghostly siren seemed to be aware she was being recorded. She moved toward the police body cam with an eerie grace, as though the cold, hallowed air did not touch her. Each step slow and deliberate as her hips swayed in the dress, her legs long and bare beneath the gown, each step a statement of sensual power. She paused over the fallen body of a dead cop, tilting her head as if admiring the mutually assured destruction she had orchestrated. Mary reveals the cheap burner phone she used to lure both cops and criminals into her deadly trap. She holds the phone up, as if to say, "I've got you." Her nails filed into claws of implied violence. Men of unchecked power and cruelty, their lives ended by phone calls from the dead. She had watched from the shadows as they destroyed each other, never needing to lift a finger. Caught in a half-life of death and rebirth, Mary's soul had gained a power far more deadly than any bullet. A gift for sensing the fragile sins buried deep in men's hearts, weaponizing their own violent instincts against them. And in doing so, reducing powerful men of authority to helpless victims of their own minds. Mary had become a silent predator, haunting the city's rotting concrete jungle, preying on the guilty, stalking the back alleys and lingering atop skyscrapers, watching with a stare as cold as a mausoleum. Slowly, she reached up and removed her mask, revealing an alluring woman of gothic beauty. This wasn't the tragic, lost soul who wandered Archer Avenue, searching for a ride home. This Mary had been reborn, now a ghostly femme fatale of spectral vengeance, haunting the morally corrupt and holding them accountable in ways no earthly justice ever could. Her hair, once blonde, now black as a witch's Sabbath, cascaded in waves down her back, styled with the bygone glamour of Veronica Lake. It swept over one side, veiling half her delicate face in shadows. With a sly smile playing on her dark lips, she leaned closer to the camera, her large, piercing blue eyes shimmering with dark delights. Then, with a pale, elegant hand, she blew a kiss, a chilling and seductive gesture. Mary's apparition began to dissolve, unraveling like wisps of smoke in the cold Halloween air, her dark veil of hair dissipating first, then her body breaking apart, scattering like ashes in the wind. Her eyes remained a heartbeat longer, two searing points of cerulean, vivid as fractured ice beneath a winter moon, a blue so intense it seemed to bleed into the darkness. Before they, too, began to fade away, softly dimming like dying stars, until all that remained was a ghostly imprint, etched briefly in the dark. The camera captured her otherworldly departure, an ethereal silhouette slipping back into the shadows, as if she were nothing more than a phantom conjured from the night itself. When investigators arrived, beams of cold, sterile light cut across the graffiti-laden wall, catching a message scrawled in wet, congealing blood. Beside it, a row of jack-o'-lanterns grinned wickedly, their hollow eyes flickering with the last shivers of candlelight, casting jagged shadows that clawed at the night. The words dripped down the wall like a warning from the beyond. Halloween night belongs to Resurrection Mary. In the years that followed, the loved ones of those lost in the raid began receiving unsettling text messages. Messages claiming to be from the deceased. Voices trapped in hell, begging to be set free. Even more disturbing, these messages arrived from numbers disconnected long ago, or from phones that had been buried with their owners, as if those that died had continued to suffer.